Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Matt.
Welcome to the Strange and Beautiful Book Club. Welcome back, friends.
Welcome back.
It's time to talk about an episode. Nope, a movie. It's time to talk about
a movie.
We watched Anguish from 1987, starring Zelda Rubinstein, Michael Lerner, and basically nobody else that you've ever heard of. It was produced and written and directed by a guy named Bigas Luna. It is a Spanish production.
Oh.
And the guy who directed it, this is pretty much the only thing he ever did in English.
All right.
This movie was recommended to us by our friends over at Cinematic Anarchy months ago. And then we went on a bit of a jaunt off into Vampires of 1979. And we've done a couple other things. And it was time. And so we sat and we watched all 1 hour and 29 minutes of this.
One hour and 29 minutes was bearable.
I think this might actually be the first body horror movie that we've done since Pandorum.
Yeah.
Longtime listeners will know that Matt and I are not necessarily the biggest body horror fans. However, I feel like all of the body horror in this movie was for a purpose.
Definitely.
I never felt like it was gratuitous. I felt like, oh, I'm watching somebody get stabbed in the eyeball. Well, there's a reason for that. Except at the very beginning, when within the first like 5 minutes, we watch a surgeon removing a cornea.
I'm pretty sure this is legit surgery footage.
That was gross.
Gross.
I almost died. We watch a knife get inserted into a real eyeball. And then we follow that up with there's a bunch of students looking at a wall of preserved eyeballs. There's an eyeball theme. If you're the type of person that thinks eyeballs are gross and you like horror movies, this is a movie for you. If you think eyeballs are gross and you don't like horror movies, under no circumstances, watch Anguish. I mean, I think it's interesting. So we start with this guy, the Michael Lerner's character. And he's apparently working at an eye doctor because he ends up putting in this lady's eye contacts and she has like a panic attack when these contacts go in, which when this movie came out, these were gas permeable lenses.
Right.
These are not
hard.
These are not your soft lenses. These are, I got a map made of my eyeball shape and then a piece of glass was made the exact shape of my eyeball. And you put them in, and it was literally putting a tiny lens in your eyeball.
Yeah. And if it didn't quite fit right,
it hurt.
It hurts a lot.
It hurt. And you had to get used to wearing them. There was like a transitional period where you would wear them for a little while and take them off. And they were, you did not sleep in these. When they popped out, they motherfucking popped out. And you know the joke, like, oh my God, I lost my contact lenses. They were also astronomically expensive. So this really wealthy lady is getting these contacts and he puts them in and she's like, they're cutting my eyeballs. They're cutting my eyeballs.
I would say more entitled than wealthy.
Yeah, maybe.
Or does one connote the other?
She ends up making a crack about his vision because he's wearing really thick glasses and he's like, oh, okay. And he just leaves. And so then a nurse comes in and she's like, well, he's really sensitive about his vision. So I'll get those. Like, I'm sorry you had a bad experience. Like, he's not normally like this. I'm really sorry. And then when he goes home, we get our first taste of maybe why John is the way that he is. Because his mom is like, I'll help you. And of course, it's Zelda Rubinstein, who, if you might know her from, hopefully you know her from this movie because we're about to spoil the shit out of it. But also, like, Poltergeist. She's the little psychic lady that comes in Poltergeist. She was like 4'3". Apparently, Zelda Rubinstein was seriously considered for the role of the Shadout Mapes in Dune, 1984.
Ooh. I can
just see that one, yeah. Now, when you've lived with prophecy as long as I have. That's my best Zelda impression. I was trying to figure out if we knew why she was so constitutionally petite. But I don't see anything. But she's only 4'3". And I think that was, I mean, she's a great actress. She's good in everything she's in. But also, she makes a good creepy character. Like, that's why she was good in Poltergeist. That's why she's good in this. Because she's mother. She's just the mother.
That's right, that's all she gets.
And we get a lot of spiraling imagery because at this point she's like, I know what will calm you down. The hypno record. So she puts this record on that's a spiral, which we focus on for a really long time. And then she does this, you're feeling the blood rush to your head and then you feel it slowly release from your head and it's giving you strength and it's doing all of this stuff. And you're like,
she's got a whole mantra.
Woo! And actually at one point in the movie, we do that for a good like 15 to 20 minutes. It's like a long time. And at the very beginning, there's a disclaimer that's like, this movie contains like hypnotic footage and subliminal imagery. And if at any point you feel faint or you hear disembodied voices or whatever, get up and leave the theater. Like the movie that you watch. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. So, which is interesting because at a certain point as we're watching, it actually zooms out and we realize that not only are we watching a movie, but there is an audience watching the movie that we are watching. And now we are watching the audience watch the movie.
We went full, reverse Inception.
I guess. We went full Exception. Zoom out here. Because now we're kind of going with a couple of people in the audience. But the two people really are these girls, which honestly, this is really just like a teen movie about being a terrible friend. Because this lady has clearly taken her best friend or her friend to this horror movie when this girl is not a horror movie person because she's like, this is gross. He's cutting people's eyes out. Oh, we zoom out when we go to the guy's, the house. He like shows up at that woman's house and he's like, I have your contacts. I'm sorry. I put
there was
the wrong
a terrible mix up.
I'm here now. I'll put them in for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so they let him in, which the gate is about 18 inches tall. So he could have just stepped over it. That'd have been fine, but whatever. And he goes up to put her contacts in. He puts her contacts in and then he slits her throat. And then we see just off camera him removing her eyeballs, which I was reading some like at the time reviews of this movie. And the one I thought was really funny, interesting, was this guy that was like, well, it was a good movie. It was great, but it was way too gory. So it got a low rating because it was too gory.
Interesting.
And it's like, did you not know that this was a horror movie? Or what? And then another one was criticizing this movie for poor execution of its ideas. And I'm not...
Maybe they were reading more into the movie than it was giving.
What is that movie we just watched where they were like, it didn't have a payoff? The payoff wasn't there at the end. Oh, that was Radius. We watched Radius. Yeah. And the criticism was like, well, it didn't have a payoff. I don't know what you're fucking talking about. Well, again, I don't know what you're talking about. What did they not execute properly? Were you hoping that the eyeballs would look more real when he was rinsing them in the sink? I don't know what you want from me. So he cuts that woman's eyeballs out and he's like rinsing them in the sink. And then her boyfriend or husband or whatever comes up and sees that he's mutilating her and he chases him and he ends up stabbing him in the heart and taking his eyeballs and then he just leaves and he sticks his gum as he sticks his gum
he's
on
sticking his gum everywhere
as he sticks his gum on the gate. That's when we zoom out and we realize we're watching a movie because we were like, oh, okay. I mean, we knew we were watching a movie, but these people are now also watching a movie. And the one poor girl is like, can we please go? I just want to go. And her friend's like, stop. We paid money.
You have to give me my $5 back.
I'm not leaving. She's eating popcorn the whole time, too. It's like the bottomless container of popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
She's just like intently eating popcorn. And the whole like 18-minute long, I need to go back and time it, but it's so long. The hypnotism scene where it's like repetitious music of like, like, and then there's a swirling spiral and then Zelda is, the mother is like saying her mantra over and over again and we're seeing all this weird imagery And in the spiral that we see, there's like eyeballs opening and closing, and it's really weird and it's really long. And it makes you uncomfortable. And spoiler alert, it also makes the people in the theater uncomfortable, which is interesting.
And it would have been even more meta to see this in the theater.
We find out at the very end, because when the credits start to roll, we zoom out again, and it's actually people are watching the movie of the people. Of the people watching the movie. So it's a movie within a movie within a movie that you are also watching.
So it's like makes audience, you wonder.
It's like audience participation.
Is somebody watching you?
Exactly.
When you're watching
That's
this
what
movie.
You're supposed to be left with, is that little bit of psychological, oh shit, how far out does it go? That was pretty good.
Yeah.
Because after a while, John leaves. His mother is, for whatever reason, like, all the eyes in the city are mine. And so she wants him to go and steal people's eyeballs.
Yeah, we don't get an explanation for what her motivations are.
It doesn't matter. And at this point, we're switching back and forth.
How they have a slightly psychic link.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved all the reverb. Like when she picks up the shell phone. And she can hear what's happening. And then a phone rings and he looks over because the phone's ringing and she looks over and it's actually her phone that's ringing. There's a lot of really cool psychic stuff that's happening there. Mm-hmm. And then eventually he leaves. He's like, I'm leaving, mother. And so he goes to see the Lost World, like the black and white dinosaur movie. And so now he is watching a movie at a movie theater while the people in the movie theater are watching the movie of him watching the movie in the movie theater while we are watching the people in the theater watching, you know, so on and so forth.
And this is the most meta thing to come out of not Facebook.
Yeah.
Recently.
Yeah. I mean, it's a cool idea, and it's really unique and really interesting. I've seen a lot of, oh no, the movie comes to life, but not a lot of like, who is watching who? Who watches The Watchmen? What's happening here? And he like barricades himself in this theater, and then he goes on a murder spree in the theater real quiet-like though. Like he starts at the back, and he kills his way forward. And he ends up killing the lady at the concession stand, and he kills the lady at the ticket booth. Well, he doesn't kill her at the ticket booth. He, like, swipes her from above, which is my least favorite horror death. It doesn't matter, because the first layer of abstraction, the mother, which is what this movie is called, because we find out the movie theater playing the movie,
It's called The Mommy.
It's called The Mommy. And he, like, leans over. The Mommy itself is the most abstract movie part, and then as it moves out to the next one, it's a little bit more real,
right?
And then I guess I imagine farther out it gets realer until you get to us. Of course, we're the real ones, we're not in the simulation. And maybe, and so the guy like leans over the side of the, like, she's in the toilet, she could just get up and leave, but he like leans over the stall and he's like slashing her from above with his tiny little needle knife.
Yeah.
And somehow that kills
her. Retractable scalpel.
Because she holds her arms up to block him, and I guess it like cuts her wrists or something.
Yeah, defensive wounds.
Sure. And that's enough to kill her, even though she could have just opened the door and left. But you know what? Sometimes you're not thinking in the moment, so it's perfectly fine. And I honestly didn't think that this could happen. I thought the part where people stand up and just start screaming in the movies and that you can't get them to stop was like not real until I did that. I had a moment where I completely lost my shit and I could not stop screaming and everyone was trying to calm me down. And when I got done, I was like, oh, that's real life.
When did this happen?
That was when you were gone on a business trip. And
okay. I thought you meant this happened at a movie.
No, this happened in real life. I had a sudden dramatic family emergency. So I put my little baby chickens that the kids and I were raising in this house with my mom's blind, deaf dachshund, and he knocked over the bucket and killed all the baby chickens. So as the ambulance was driving away, I went in to find a like brutal murder scene of all these baby chickens and this 16-year-old blind, deaf dachshund standing in the middle of it. And I just started screaming, the babies, and it would not stop. And y'all, it's real. It happens. And once you're in it, like, I couldn't calm down and I couldn't stop screaming. It was just like, it was too much. And my nervous system was just like, well, We are checking out for a few minutes. So we're just going to let everybody know that shit's gone down and they need to come help you. And but do it. We're going to sound the alarm, okay? And we're just going to scream. And that happens, you know, in the movie once they finally realize that this guy is killing people. And it's really interesting because as time goes on, the lines between the movie they are watching and the movie they are in start to blur. Because there's a scene where, like, this little kid wants a snack. And so she gets up to go get more popcorn and she's walking up and she finds the dead body. But you don't realize until she finds the dead body that that is actually the mommy and not the movie we're watching.
Right.
Yeah. And one of the goofs is there's sunflower seed shells on the ground. And it's really common in Spanish theaters to give out sunflower seeds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's common to see sunflower seed shells on the ground in Spanish theaters, but not in the U.S.
Oh, and they consider that a, like, continuity?
Yeah, or... I guess, because at the time you didn't really get those at a movie theater.
Okay.
Like, kind of like going to a steakhouse and finding peanut shells on the floor, which isn't a thing anymore, but at a time, there was a time when that was a thing.
I think it's still a thing. We just don't really go to steakhouses anymore.
No, because of peanut allergies, because of the prevalence of peanut allergies.
Oh.
Because for some people, just being in a room with the shells would be enough. Yeah. And so as he's murdering these people and his mom is yelling at him in his head, the little girl, the poor little girl who's super scared, starts to hear the mom in her head and gets, like, sick and ends up leaving. She's like, fuck it, I'm leaving. I'm done with this. You're not going to leave with me. I'm going. And she's been looking around at everybody and everybody is acting really sus because we just had this long hypnotism scene where everybody was clearly kind of losing it a little bit. And when she's in the bathroom, she sees a pair of sneakers come in beside her. So she runs back to her friend. She's like, the murderer is in the bathroom. And her friend's like, what?
There was a man in the bathroom.
Yeah, there was a man in the bathroom, and I think he's the murderer. And she's like, what are you talking about? So she goes out. Well, lo and behold, one of the dudes who's been attending the mommy a whole bunch starts murdering everybody in sync with the movie that is playing on the screen. And I have to imagine.
He keeps checking his watch.
Yeah.
And so he's trying to follow the timeline of the movie. And I think one of the parts where it carries over, I think, the most is when the mommy guy goes into the movie theater. When John goes into the movie theater to see The Lost World.
Yeah.
And he sneaks up behind somebody and kills them. We see, like, three or four people in the, I'm going to call it the anguish movie theater.
Yeah.
With the teenage girls. They keep, like, looking around behind them.
Yeah.
Because they're, like, so in it. And they start feeling nervous, like somebody's after them too. But then some people are so affected by this, they're having, like, heart palpitations and and panic attack.
And their eyes start hurting.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes her contact lens out and spits so on gross. It and then rubs it with her shirt and puts it back in. That's not sanitary, y'all.
No.
But anyway, her friend goes out. Her friend actually acts really intelligently in the movie theater. I was super impressed. She hides and then she, like, sneaks into the boys' bathroom.
It's because she's seen a lot of horror movies.
It is. Until she's inoculated. Gets outside. And then she's like, ooh, ah, 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 which, you know, as observed, it can happen. But I love how she walks up to a dude and she's like, there's somebody killing everybody in the movie theater. And he's like, oh, honey.
Did you watch a scary movie?
Did you watch a scary movie?
Okay, let's take you back to your mommy and daddy.
Well, as soon as he realizes it's real, he's like, oh, shit. So they call the police. And then the police drive from the other fucking state, apparently. It takes so long. And then they get there.
Time is warped.
And they're like, well, I think we should probably close off the road. And we should put up some signs. And maybe we should wait till Bob gets here. Because he wanted to be involved in the next sting operation. It takes so fucking long. People are dying inside. And I don't know if this would felt. I think this hits a lot different. And we feel like anxious about this. Because when this movie happened, this had never happened.
Yeah, there hadn't been, like, a massacre in a movie theater.
Yeah, and now there has been. So I'm like, oh, shit. This has happened. This is real life. And these police officers are not taking this seriously. But if you watch this in 1987, you'd be like, oh, my God, are they going to be able to stop him? I don't know. Because the guy who's watched the mommy too many times ends up shooting everybody in the lobby, sneaking back into the movie theater, tying up all the doors so nobody can escape. He takes the girl hostage who was really scared because her friend was like, all right, I'll go get popcorn. I'll check the bathroom. I'll come right back. And she was like, I'll come with you. And she's like, no, you won't. You guys stay here so you can tell me what happened. And then the two people behind her end up going to try to find the girl because the one girl's so scared. She's just sitting there crying.
Right. The husband gets up and goes.
And he gets shot immediately. And then the wife goes and she gets shot immediately. And like the body count is actually only 7. Oh, 14. 14.
Oh. Okay.
But I don't know if that includes the people that were killed in the Mommy or only Anguish movie theater.
Right.
I don't know. Because they're watching the Mommy, we're watching Anguish, maybe. Because by the time we get to the captain, like the end of the movie. Okay, so eventually everybody gets out. I mean, and then everybody escapes. The police get in there. They get into the projection booth and they end up killing the guy with like a sniper rifle. And then the poor little girl who is so terrified looks up at the screen and Michael Lerner's character, John, like reaches down and stabs her eye. And she grabs her eye and there's a metal tool sticking out of her eye and she's like freaking out and they end up having to sedate her because nothing actually happened to her. She's just
right,
so and, disturbed in by the this struggle movie.
As they're getting her out of the movie theater, we do like finally see she takes her hands off of her face and her eyes are fine.
And she's fine.
She's just so caught up in the movie. Like how much can a movie drag you in?
Yeah.
And what's the worst that could happen?
Well, then she goes to the hospital and her friend is there and her friend leaves and then her friend gets her throat cut in the elevator. And then John from the movie comes in and he's like, don't worry, I'm just a figment of your imagination. And that's the end of the movie. And then the credits start rolling and then the credits are actually rolling in another movie theater.
And so lights, house lights come up and we see the credits roll and people start getting up out of the seats.
Yeah. So somebody, the mommy was being watched by Anguish, was being watched by yet another level of abstraction.
Yep.
Maybe that was the Lost World.
How do those dinosaurs feel?
I don't know. Not great by the end of this. I mean, it was good. It was good. I really enjoyed this movie. It was one of those ones where I kind of want to rewatch it now that I know all the stuff that happens.
Yeah, to watch out for,
yeah,
for well, clues there's about a lot the other of layers.
Really good, like the spiral imagery, the snails, the birds in cages. There's a lot of really good, like, layered metaphor in this movie. Like, the bird gets free, and the first thing it does is trap itself.
Right. And because then, it doesn't know any better.
Yeah. And then they bring the mom to the movie theater where John is, and she ends up getting shot in all the kerfuffle. And there's a part where she's talking to him, she's like tracing his hairline, which is in a spiral, and then they have the spiral record going. And there's just a lot of really cool layered imagery in this movie. And on the surface, right, not a lot happens. Because in The Mommy, all that happens is the guy kills a couple of people. Then he goes a bit rogue. He locks himself in a movie theater. He goes on a movie spree. He gets caught. I mean, he goes on a murder spree. He gets caught.
Yeah.
And then in the next layer of abstraction in Anguish movie theater, the guy goes on a murder spree and he gets caught. And the only real drama is like when her friend is in the bathroom and he's dragging the bodies through and she's trying to stay quiet. And so in terms of plot, that's pretty thin. I mean, we have, what, 2 sets, maybe 3 sets. And that's about it. We've got a poor bucket full of snails that got broken. And I'm not as concerned about, what did they release, like 100 snails? It's not like the 10,000 rats in Nosferatu, which I'm still not over, by the way. And just, I don't know, it was just really, it made you think. And I like a movie that made you think. But if you're a horror fan who likes gore, it also gave you gore. So you got like a little bit of body horror, a little bit of psychological thriller, a little bit of just general mind fuckery.
Yeah.
And so I think in the end it was a good movie.
Yeah, I think it was a good balance of those three elements.
Yeah. It does not leave you a lot to talk about because, like, what the fuck happened? It's just an interesting concept, the movie within a movie within a movie. Like, oh, that's what I kept thinking. What does it remind me of? And it's like the never ending story for horror fans. Maybe the mommy just needed a name. Say my name. Right? They're going to make a television show or they're in development. There's a never ending story, television show in development. It'd be fine because honestly, the movie is like the first chapter of the book.
Yeah.
And Bastion has a villain arc, kind of like the villain arc in Anguish, only without eyeball removal. Kind of, though, because remember, he makes a dragon so that he can save people from the dragon. And they're like, well, if you hadn't made the dragon, nobody'd need saving. And the dragon burned people's homes and killed people. And he's like, yeah, but now I can show up and be the hero. They're like, but you created the dragon. You're the villain.
You created the problem.
You created the problem. At one point, I did want to mention this. We saw a fetus get dropped in water. And it was clearly just like a doll that got dropped in the water. And we just finished watching Dune 2, where there's a fair number of fetuses. And then we watched Dune 1984, where there's the fetus like wraps itself in the weird liquidy, fleshy colored blanket thing. And I just have to ask a question, and I want a legitimate answer. How many fetuses is it okay to include in a movie?
I don't know. Is there a number?
Is there is any number of fetuses too many? I would argue yes. Any number of fetus is too many fetus.
Even in 2001 A Space Odyssey?
Yeah. Well, that's baby. That's space baby. It's not really a fetus. And we know my feelings on 2001 A Space Odyssey. I slam it every chance I get, except the last like 8 minutes. As soon as he's in the room and we're doing the like, he looks over and he's on the bed, then he's on the bed. That I like. The rest of it, no. Weird fever dream. Get the fuck out of here. I did like the line when the two girls are sitting there and the one girl is like crying and upset and her friend is like, oh, you're so lame. Next time I'll take you to a Disney movie.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. I wonder what this would have been like to see in theaters, like to see the long hypnotism scene on a big screen. I feel like I would have felt like I was losing my mind because that scene is so long.
Yeah, maybe the scale of it would have made it a lot more disorienting.
Yeah, because it would have been that big spiral because she puts that spiral on the record player.
And everything
player.
Else is dark in the room.
Yeah. Oh, let's talk about that ceiling. The ceiling in John and Mother's house that's like beams with carving in between.
Right? There's so much like depth and of texture there.
There's so many textures in this movie. Their whole house is really textured. She wears that knitted shawl the whole time. Mm-hmm. That's somehow too small, even though she's very short. Anyway, she died in 2010. Michael Lerner didn't die till last year. He died in April of last year.
Oh.
I know. It's really sad. And nobody else. I think maybe one other person has a picture on IMDb.
I know. I was looking. I was like, the girl that gets really, really scared, she looks really familiar.
Yeah, I thought so too.
I'm pretty sure I've seen her in something else not long after this. Because she was maybe a little bit older, but not much older.
Yeah. The guy who plays the dude who kills everybody in the movie theater is from Catalan. The director's actually not Spanish. He's Catalonian.
There's a difference.
I want to read you this review because this dude is obviously bitter. And I'm only going to read the last part.
Okay.
This is a 2-star review on IMDb. Cutting back and forth between The Mommy, a film that I doubt would draw in the crowds, and the, quote, real action, director Bigas Luna experiments in mixing art house surrealism with the slasher genre, which go together like oil and water, and chucks in some pretentious meta cinema for good measure. The result is a woeful experience, tedious, repetitive, and thoroughly irritating, as if any film headlined by Rubenstein could be anything but.
Oof.
Ooh, that man had some opinions. Well, I'm assuming it's a man. I feel like that's a good assumption, though. What do we think? What do we think about the mashup of surrealism and I think surrealism
I
and
love
slashers
throwing
go
in
together.
Surrealism in very serious style movies.
I think surrealism and something like a slasher flick
it kind
would
of
go
breaks
together
you out
really
of the,
well.
It breaks you out of the mold. Like
I mean, that's what Mandy
of what you
is.
Expect.
Mandy's surrealism and slasher.
Yeah.
That's what that is. Straight. That's all it is because it's there. You think this movie's gory. You haven't gone gory till you've gone knife dick, and that's all I'm gonna say. Plus, it's surreal. It's weird, and it becomes more unhinged over time, just like this movie does. I think those two things go great together. I don't agree with this guy at all. I can see, you know what? Some people get real, they get their panties quite twisted around about genre.
Yeah.
And what fits in a genre. And that's a big debate right now because people think that if authors start writing in one particular style and they have a certain set of tropes that they include in their books, that that should be what they include in their books because that's what their audience expects. And if you write something different, you are deceiving your fans. And no. I'm sorry, but that is a giant pile of fucking bullshit. And that is ridiculous. When did we start to think we could dictate to people what they made? Telling an author, no, you can't write
that.
I won't like it. Like you matter to the person who's writing. You know what I mean? Like you can't write for an audience. That's the problem right now is we're creating movies for audiences 18 months ago. And everybody's moved on and we don't want that anymore. And so you can't write a book for the people who read your last book because now they're not the same. Time has passed.
Right.
Anyway, the moral of that story being people get real up in their feels about genre. And if it's a slasher, it should be a slasher. And if it's surrealist, it should be surrealist. And neither the twain shall meet.
That sounds like someone who doesn't want to be challenged.
Yeah. I was reading one about somebody called Star Wars Fantasy and they were like, no, it's not. It's the epitome of sci-fi. And I wanted to be like, well, no. No, I would say it's more fantasy than it is sci-fi. I mean, it takes place in space, but the technology is not the focus.
Right.
And often for sci-fi, the technology is more of the focus, but also who gives a shit? Who gives an actual shit, whether it's fantasy or sci-fi? I mean, people use it as like signposts. Woo, yeah, I only like sci-fi. Okay, got it. Good. Well, I mean, if you want to limit yourself like that, that's fine. But don't put that on me and don't put that on anybody else. Here's another 3-star review. A novel idea, but mostly disappointing and annoying. This is one of those films that starts out promising and then a quarter of the way through, you realize that you've picked up something that is going to be a disappointment and you'd be right.
Oh, so they didn't like the split.
No. In fact, okay, we get there. This is also one of those films that shows the audience watching the film and that in itself is a novel idea if done right, and this isn't. What started out as atmospheric and intense ends with a somewhat predictable and annoying end. Too bad, too, because the acting is actually quite good. Lots of money went into the sets and production design. Lots of work went into picking out just the right props. The film has a lot going for it, including the original story, but it isn't executed well. Why didn't you just make this a straight film? It could have been a great horror flick. I say skip this and hunt out a different horror flick. I like this movie, but I didn't like anything about it.
Okay. I can go along with that.
Okay.
Where I'm glad I watched the movie. I know in the back of my head I'm going to be chewing on it for a bit. But when I started watching the movie, I'm like, okay, great. It's a like gory horror movie. I'm totally not interested.
Yeah.
And then, boom, we're in a movie theater watching that movie. Now I'm interested because something has changed. And then we start getting like the interaction between the mommy and Anguish in the theater, and now we're kind of playing with something interesting. And then towards the end, I'm not really pulled along for the actual violence or anything.
But. Yeah. Yeah, we're never in it for the gore. We're usually in it for the story.
Yeah.
This movie didn't have a ton of story, but I think it was fine. I mean, it didn't have a story. The story was you sitting in this weird moment where you're watching people watch a movie while you're watching
it's a movie. It's that liminal space.
Yeah.
Of almost like warning, a warning to yourself about getting too caught up.
Yeah.
In the movie and what can happen from that.
Yeah, it was the perfect length for one thing. An hour and 30 minutes is as long as this movie needed to be.
Yeah.
Any longer and it would have felt like, ugh. Also, this movie was filmed on like nothing. Like they had no money. Like it's really low budget. And I think they did a great job with what they had. Mm-hmm. They had the sets they had. They had a couple of actors. And then they had, you know, what they had. This is another good one. It's from 2003, actually. So this review is 20 years old. I saw this movie in the late 80s in a sneak preview, and it is still the only movie I have ever walked out of. Now, I want you to know that the title of this review is fantastic, with about 16 exclamation marks. I found it extremely anguishing. I remember two scenes. In the beginning, there is a scene where a small bird has to be freed from behind a closet, and the other, as the viewer sees the killer sorting out his kit in the cinema and the girls watching the horror movie. Fantastic movie, fantastic pictures, but I couldn't stand it. Oh, this one claims it's sci-fi. Yes, I said sci-fi. This movie takes place on multiple levels of reality, bouncing back and forth in it like a tennis match. Both levels give you a very good movie, but when the two start to blend and you see that you're crossing, or maybe there is only one reality, is when the movie moves into full mind-bending mode. I like that one. It's a sci-fi. You can tell because people are traveling. Nobody's traveling, though. That's what I mean. That review
right. Even John at the hospital at the end, I don't think they're implying that John from the mommy movie universe has traveled to see Patty in the hospital.
Patty and Louisa, I think.
And no, like he didn't like dimension jump into her reality, but he got into her head.
Yeah.
Because whoever made the mommy made a really good like psychological manipulation film.
Yeah. It was good. Also a little bit about like the dangers of filmmaking. And what happens if a film goes too far?
Yeah.
Which is an interesting concept. It's like a violent video games make people kill. What if you could make a movie where you could literally hypnotize people into becoming killers? Should you? Would you? Could you?
Ooh, I wonder if this was part of MK Ultra. The like secret defense program for brainwashing. I watched
The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Ah, yes.
Doesn't that have Jeff Bridges in it? And he has an eagle feather around his neck, and it's not. It's actually a dyed turkey feather.
Maybe. It also has
George Clooney.
Yeah.
I think Ewan McGregor might even be in it. I remember wanting to watch it because I was like, oh, I like a lot of the people in this. And then it took me a while to get around to it, and I don't think I've ever watched it more than just one time. But they're in MK Ultra.
Yep.
I don't know. This was good. This was very 80s. It felt very 80s. I feel like sometimes in the 80s, you get these really cool experimental films that also kind of look like music videos. And that's what this felt like.
Yeah.
I don't think I agree with any of the reviews that we read, though. Like, I can't, if I had a criticism, it's none of that. It's just that not a lot happens. And then it does slow down at the end. Because you want the police to get there. But I think if I watched it again, it wouldn't feel slow. The second time around. You know, sometimes when you first watch it, you're like, everything's taking forever. And then you watch it again, and you're like, oh, that didn't take a really long time. I was just anxious to see how it turned out. And I think there was no moment where I was like, oh, shit, these people are making dumb decisions. I felt like everybody, it was good. It was good. Yeah, thank you for recommending it. I don't know that I would have sat and watched this ever. The tag line for this is like, I want all the eyes in the city or something. And then like the description is like a mother uses her telepathic powers to get her son to kill.
Yeah, that's all misleading.
Yeah, none of them have. So if you started, but again, I don't know that the reveal has the same impact if I knew it was coming. If you're not expecting it,
yeah.
Yeah. I think if I just sat and watched it cold, which we did, that worked out best. Although I had seen something that was like, it's actually about people watching. Because remember, we were watching it and you were like, yeah. What is this? And I was like,
Maybe I have the wrong movie because I thought, from what I read, this was about two teenage girls watching a movie in a theater. And then it was like 2 minutes later and it went whoop
out
in the theater.
And you were like, oh, okay. Because you, the opening sequence where we see the eye surgery, Matt goes, oh, God.
like gross. I can handle like gory-ish stuff. If I have some warning.
I can handle gory things because I know they're fake. Like I can handle him taking out the people's eyes.
That wasn't fake.
The woman getting her eyes taken out off screen was scarier than anyone that we actually saw.
I really liked that we didn't go full practical effects, gory horror, cutting her eyes out of her head. We just had the camera, the edge of the camera view, like just below her ear.
Yeah. And so you just saw her body moving.
We saw her body moving and we saw some blood dripping down.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Really effective.
That was the best way to do it.
That is exactly how you should do it. That's exactly how, that's what I, because the implied how bad it looks is always going to be way worse than what you show me.
Right.
But now for Gare Can Get It, which is another podcast we do, I have watched two movies with Meg where real animals are killed on screen. And let me tell you, I don't like it. I don't like it. There's one where a cow gets shot. And then they drag this cow's body around. And my friend was like, maybe it's a fake cow. And I was like, that's not a fake cow. That is a real cow. And then the one that we just watched, they kill a deer. And then they like process the deer. And I was like, I don't like this. I mean, I can handle any amount of like on-screen gore because I know it's fake. Like I know those are special effects. Our daughter does the same thing. Now that's not real, right? Nope. Okay. Then she can watch it. But once I know it's real, I'm like, mm-mm. I don't like it. So that scene where he, and some of the posters, that's the poster, is the eyeball with the blade in it. Ugh. And I was like, what the shit? As someone who has had eye surgery, I object. Like, I don't want to see that. That's so gross. Ugh. That's probably the grossest part in the whole movie. That and him sticking his gum on shit. And then the killer in the Anguish movie theater never gets identified. He's just the man. And he's supposed to be reciting lines from the movie, but I kind of wanted that to be more clear. I mean, it was clear in that the guy in the movie, John, had a hostage, and then the man takes Patty hostage at the same time. But he's supposed to be quoting along with the movie, and it's not real clear that he is?
No, he's not quoting along with the movie. I think he's saying the words that he wants John to have said to reconcile with Mother.
Oh, because John is still kind of at rebelling odds with Mother, yeah. And so the man keeps going like, for you, Mother, I'll do it for you, Mother.
Yeah.
Which even Patty is hearing Zelda's voice in her head, the mother's voice in her head. And you're like, I think maybe one of the things you're supposed to be asking yourself is this intentional? Is it unintentional? Is the movie itself some sort of supernatural thing?
Is it supernatural or is it just psychological?
Or is it just psychological? And the person who made the movie was just too good at getting it set up.
Yeah.
Kind of like that Pokemon episode that gave a bunch of kids seizures.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, questions for the ages. Would you rewatch this movie?
Probably not.
I might watch it one more time just to be like, what did I miss?
I almost suggested that we watch it again, maybe like sped up a little bit so we could get through it quicker before we record.
We should watch. Remember when we'd done a couple episodes? We did like Shaun of the Dead versus World War Z. Mm-hmm. We should do a Anguish versus Neverending Story. He was with you when you were in the swamp. What?
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, it's the same concept, right? Because he's reading the book and then we zoom out and we are watching.
Right. Bastion him. Is Patty.
And then the childlike empress makes a comment about there. In turn, there are people who were watching his adventures, which is us.
Yeah.
And I always thought that concept was really cool because it acknowledges all levels of viewership. Yeah. And that's what this movie does. The childlike empress, the lady who plays the childlike empress, I think her name is Tammy. She's going to be in a movie.
Oh, finally?
Yeah. Well, she's real active on Instagram and she just completely owns the I'm the childlike empress. Like I was on TV for 5 minutes at one point in your life and it's great. Like I love, you know, there's the actors that are like, oh God, I don't want to be remembered for that one thing that completely torpedoed my career because I was only ever in that. I love the actors that are like, hell yeah, I was in that. Like saxophone guy from The Lost Boys. Making his bank as saxophone guy from The Lost Boys.
Oh, yes. I've heard about him.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I mean, get it.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
I'd be like, hell yeah, I was saxophone guy.
Yep. Still hot pants and suspenders.
I don't think he's wearing suspenders. I think that's just body oil.
Oh, right. Yeah. He's not.
No shirt, nothing. Just body oil.
One of the mental images of him had some kind of strappy thing on him.
Yeah.
But no, you're right.
No. Could be his belt. He's got a pretty prominent belt on his purple leggings.
Yeah, maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, this is devolved. I think we're going to leave it here. Go find this movie if you didn't watch it and you just listened to us. Because even though we spoiled it, honestly, you can't experience this movie without experiencing this movie. So go watch it. And until next time, friends.
Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, no, you got to do your thing. This is the one where we do the
thing. Oh. So remember, sometimes the strangest and most agonizing things are the most beautiful, too.
So be who you are and love what you love. Until next time, friends.
Bye.
Bye. Love what you love, what you love, what you love.